That is the sound of a dull sheep in Alaska's Denali National Park. It was recorded by David Bechko, a soundscape engineer in Denali, who's trying to create an oral archive of the entire park. Like the other people you've heard this hour, David counts Thoreau as one of his heroes. His parents actually named him for Thoreau. Oh, and his brother? They named him Emerson. And Strange Champs wondered how Thoreau still inspires Bechko.
Has reading Thoreau shaped how you respond to what you think about living and working in Denali National Park?
Absolutely. He paid careful attention to his senses. He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. Employ your senses. To do work that involves perception, that takes a lot of practice, and I appreciate Thoreau for some of his insights into that practice.
Well, your current work gives you a chance to put that into practice, right? You're working on recording some of the soundscapes of Denali National Park?
I am indeed. And what I mean by soundscapes is landscape of sound, the kind of scenery of the ear, the spiraling of the bird song in the mornings, the sound of streams that kind of stretch out and wrap around you, and also the sounds that humans make that intermittently punctuate those natural sounds.
We should listen to some of the sounds that you've recorded. There's one I wanted to begin with is the sound of wood frogs.
Okay. To me, they're very mesmerizing, and they're definitely a sound of spring. As you can hear, there's more than one individual calling in that particular clip. They tend not to overlap each other in time. They're really good at not stepping on each other's toes, and I hear that sort of balance between the different callers.
Have you ever tried copying the sounds yourself, imitating them?
Yeah, I do that frequently to try to get a better foothold in terms of frequency. You can measure sound in three different dimensions, one being time, of course, one being amplitude, how loud it is, and one being frequency, how many waves are reaching your ear every second. So the frequency of wood frog calls are, that's pretty high frequency to get a foothold where it's at. I mean, it's not perfect, of course, but...
Wow, that was amazing. What other sounds can you make?
Well, one that I like to make a lot is willow ptarmigan. It's the state bird of Alaska, and it's got a pretty funny call that it uses when it's startled, and it goes... It's a little bit of an more explosive in the real animal, but...
Okay, so that's your version of a ptarmigan. Now let's see what the real ptarmigan sounds like. Well, tell me about what you're doing in terms of making these recordings. I mean, first of all, how do you do it? Are you just heading out into the wilderness with, you know, heavy audio equipment, a microphone and a recorder every day and just planting yourself down and recording?
That's a great question. And it gets to the root of what I'm actually doing, which is protecting solitude in the wilderness. I've got a compact recording rig, kind of fits into a waterproof Pelican case, and the microphone goes on a tripod. And that goes out for about a month at a time to 7 to 10 locations in the park every year. The locations are on a random grid, and eventually we're going to try to sample the entire park.
Wow. How do you even plug it in? How long does it run?
Equipment is supposed to run for about a month, depending on the amount of sunlight we get. If it's a real rainy month, and solar panels don't supply as much power, they run on about a typical car battery. You know, you've got your 35 amp hour car battery, and it's all the sound equipment is running to that, and then the solar panel helps to recharge the battery.
And do you actually listen back to all of that, like to a month's solid recording of what some people would say is the sound of nothing?
I do not listen back to the whole recording. I listen to a subset of clips. I listen to about 5 seconds every 5 minutes, and that crushes 24 hours down into about 24 minutes.
And what's that telling you?
When I listen back to the recordings, I can hear the timing and frequency of natural sounds. Things like circadian rhythms, things that you might not even expect, actually. The fact that a lot of rivers oscillate. In the morning and evening, you can hear the river, but then when the temperature changes and the sound wave reflects back upwards, you don't hear that during the middle of the day.
That's really fascinating. What else can your recordings tell you?
They can tell you how frequently human sounds are heard. And the reason that's important is because people come out to the park to reflect in stillness. And actually, if I can quote Zhuangzi, who is a Taoist, he said, people don't reflect themselves in running water, they reflect themselves in still water. Only still things can still the stillness in other things. Denali has the opportunity to be an exceptional reflection pond for people who are visiting, but interruptions from human-caused sounds are detrimental to that.
Do you mean, like, airplanes flying overhead?
I mean airplanes, I mean things like buses that run on the park road, but especially airplanes once you get out far away from the road.
Because Denali is a huge park. I mean, it's about the size of Vermont, right?
It is.
So I would think that there must be miles and miles of terrain where the only sound you would ever hear all day long is the sound of the natural landscape.
That isn't actually the case. Large percentage of the park has as many as 20 to 30 overflights a day. About the best you can do in the park right now is going, on average, about 8 hours without hearing an overflight. That's extremely remote.
How do those engine sounds affect wildlife? Do they just accept these sounds as kind of a new part of the soundscape they live in, or does something else go on?
That's a very good question. Most of my research is focused on solitude and wilderness quality, but there's some good research by Clinton Francis on the effects of gas compressor stations on nesting birds, and he found that although the nest density didn't change, the species diversity dropped significantly. And what that means is that although the nesting space was still being used, it was usually being used by only the one or two kinds of species that could deal with the sound.
Mm. So why would the sounds bother, in this case, birds?
Well, most animals, like ourselves, need to communicate. And having a sound that overlays over the top of that communication can be extremely detrimental. Where I was talking before about wood frogs, they partition up space, acoustic space, into niches. They know not to step on each other's toes in temporal space, in frequency space. That happens regularly in Denali. You add human sounds into the picture, it's a different story.
You also gave us there's a recording of some bears. Here, let's play this one. I think it's a mother bear with her cubs. Okay, maybe it's the mother in me. That just makes my heart melt. What was going on?
What's actually occurring there, the two cubs are sort of messing around and playing in the background, and the mother is slowly pulling the sound station apart. So eventually she ends up chewing the windscreen off, and eventually the sound cuts out right after that. So, but the cubs themselves, I'm always struck by how much they sound like human babies.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of got that wah, wah, wah kind of sound going on in the background. It's really charming.
Now, some of the sounds, I imagine, you might be just as glad you weren't there when they happened. You said there's a recording of an avalanche?
Yes. It's a powerful sound. The low-frequency energy in that particular sound, you probably would have felt it as much as you heard it.
Well, so one thing you're doing with these recordings is using them to help improve the health of the park's ecosystem, or sound system, I guess. But do you also want them to be part of a visitor's experience of the park? I mean, do you ever take people on listening walks and really teach them what to pay attention to, what to listen for?
There is an art to that. I've been lucky enough to work a lot with the schools and around the park, get the kids out and listening, and they have a great time. And actually, the hardest part for all of us, kids, adults, myself included, is just take the time to actually still yourself, your brain, and stop. That's the hardest part to it, listening.
David Bechkol is a soundscape engineer in Alaska's Denali National Park. He spoke with Anne Strangechamps.